Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey Queen fans, producer Giles here with a quick note. We had some technical issues getting this episode together. Recording remotely and bad internet's hampered us a little bit on this occasion. But don't worry, all the usual awesome chat and good Queen stuff is still here for your listening pleasure. We've just had to use an alternative channel for the first half of Rohan's recording, meaning he will sound a tiny bit muffled. In volume only, of course, never in spirit. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Queen Pod. This episode covers Side B of 1977's News of the World. So let me introduce my royal family of Queen Nuts. She's been blowing a horn since she knew she was born. It's comedian Suze Kempner.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. There was an instant look of disappointment when I said that.
No, it was expected.
I mean, I've created a rod for my own back with these things. I suck his mind, he blows my head. It's Queen documentarian Simon Lupton.
You promised you'd never tell anyone about that, but hello anyway.
He's intoxicated with that special brew. It's comedian John Robbins.
Oh, yes, very true. Yeah. Life imitating art.
Very much so. And you can't help but hear me say, it's Roe, but not too Roe. Yes, I'm your host of the Queen Podcast. Took me 2 hours to do those. 2 hours.
That's a round of applause.
Thank you very much. Thank you. That was my entire Wednesday night. So, shall we pile straight in with Queen Are the Champions?
We are the champions. We are the champions.
Well, mine very just very quickly. I was it was when I was researching for the Queen Live context bit that I shall do very shortly. And I was on the fantastic queenconcerts.com website, which I'm sure you've all visited, because I was looking at how the band sort of finished their European leg of their News of the World tour, which they did with three consecutive nights at the Empire in Wembley. And on the site, there's a really great story about the very last night of the tour from a fan called Steve, which really made me smile. And so I thought I'd just quickly share it with you all. So this takes place pre-gig while everyone is queuing outside. And Steve writes, "I had watched fans being dropped off by double-decker buses and then joining the queues. About 20 minutes before the doors opened, the routine with these buses was broken by one coming in the Wembley compound and going down the stadium side of the arena. The bus was more or less empty, maybe about 10 or so people on board. Amongst the blurred images as it went by was a Brian May-style haircut. And I thought to myself, nah, they wouldn't turn up in a double-decker bus. About 5 or so years ago, I read an interview with Brian and he was asked what was the strangest way they'd ever arrived at a gig. And he said, well, we've used helicopters, limousines, all sorts, even a London bus.
Oh, wow.
Which I just thought was genius.
Awesome.
My God, there's so much to this band. It's amazing. That's so cool. Of course, the kind of magic helicopter was like the coolest thing I'd ever seen. But now,
yeah.
A witnessed double-decker bus. I don't know how you top that. I do not know how to stop that. Now, my Queen moment of the week was inspired by Mr. John Robbins. Because if you remember on the Rainbow episode, a couple of episodes ago, we were talking about John having made the point that you've got to listen to Queen loud, right?
Mm.
So hit, that's given me an epiphany. It gave me an epiphany about a week ago, and I'm just like, okay, yeah. That should be the message of our show. Like, just play Queen loud. That's the message of our show. That's the big Queen moment. I'm seeing T-shirts, guys. I'm seeing T-shirts. I'm seeing hashtag play Queen loud. I'm like, if no one takes anything other than play Queen loud from this podcast, then we've done our job. So we've kind of like I just think I'll just step in, play Queen loud whenever, like all the time. And and then like in our blurb, instead of saying, oh, we're a Queen pod and we talk about Queen, we just say like, if you're not going to listen to this, it doesn't matter. Just play Queen loud. Just literally that. Just like a mission to just get everyone to play Queen loud. How do we feel about that?
It's good advice.
I think you might have taken cocaine, Ro.
You're right, mate. Got a cold.
It's exactly the sort of conversation I would expect to have at about at midnight in the Soho Theatre with someone who's just come out of the toilets.
No, that was a phase. I'm over it. Honestly, it's too expensive. All right, well, that's my Queen moment. That's it. That's what I've got. So that's what I'm chubbed. That's what I'm throwing down.
PQL.
PQL on T-shirt, yeah. Simon.
PQL.
Just PQL, right?
Yeah.
It's a riff on thingy, Queen Productions Limited. They're QPL.
Yeah, QPL.
We're PQL. Oh, PQL, QPL.
Yeah, okay.
Come on. It's just three letters. That's all we need. Listen, let's do some Patreon thank yous. Suze.
I'd just like to say thank you to Steve Denner, Natalie O'Hara, and Bob, a champion with a Yahoo address. Bob Champion, the Grand National winning jockey. It was Bob Champion. Bob Champion, who won the Grand National on Aldeniti. Thank you for being a Patreon.
If you want to get your name shouted out on the pod, just go along to patreon.com/QueenPod, see how you can get involved. Queen badges are going out to those of you that have... they've turned up. Queen Pod badges are going out to those of you that have already joined us, and we thank you all very, very much. Listen, let's get on to the work, shall we? This album is nuts. Alright, so we are on News of the World, Side B, released 28th of October 1977 on EMI in the UK and Elektra in the USA, produced by Queen with Mike Stone, engineered by Mike Stone, recorded July to September 1977, and it peaked at number 4 on the official charts. What a brilliant, brilliant album this is. I have a little story. I don't know if you remember on the last episode, I talked about Andy Turner, who was a assistant at Wessex Studios while they were recording this, and I told a little story about how Roger Taylor would turn up 2 days early to tune up his drums and all that kind of stuff. Do you remember that? So I got another little anecdote from Andy Turner, and he says he remembers, one of my duties for Freddie was to go down to the bakery on Dalston High Street every morning before he arrived and get him some Mr. Kipling almond slices to go with his tea. Basically, Freddie told me that no one else in the band was allowed any of his almond slices, but that I could help myself. To be honest, I thought this was just Fred being Fred. But one afternoon, Brian took an almond slice without asking, and there was a minor row about it. Freddie made this big announcement: no one is allowed to touch my almond slices. No one. Except Andy.
So rock and roll.
There you go. So there's some juicy background on News of the World. But Simon, we must have an update from you on the progress of our Mighty Four.
Jolly good. Well, I'm not quite sure how I follow almond slices, but I will do my very best. I'm going to do something slightly different this week. So never let it be said that this podcast is predictable and boring. But before I do, I will obviously quickly give everyone their fix of what Queen were doing live at this time. Basically, they went to America in November 1977 and totally bossed it. They did 26 shows over the course of 6 weeks. If you haven't seen it, there's a documentary called Queen Rock the World, which tells the story of this tour. And the behind-the-scenes footage is breathtaking. So it was the documentary that was being shot by Bob Harris at the time. And he got some amazing access. There's a sort of famous crown lighting rig, which is just looks extraordinary. And the set list is full of, well, proper bangers, really. I mean, we're talking Somebody to Love, We Will Rock You, Fast Version, Death on Two Legs, Liar, Stone Cold Crazy, Tie Your Mother Down, I'm in Love with My Car. You get the gist. Most noticeably, the band decide not to have a support act for the first time, which means more time for Queen. And as such, each concert lasts around 2.25 hours,
featuring
26 songs, 27 if you include God Save the Queen at the end, which is immense.
It's amazing.
They then take a couple of months off at the beginning of 1978 before squeezing in another 20 shows around Europe, finishing at Wembley, as we mentioned, and then it's back into the studio for Jazz. So that's where they were live. But now for something completely different. I wanted to draw your attention to the BBC session that was recorded on the 28th of October in 1977. Now, for those who don't know, essentially these were opportunities for bands to promote their latest albums by being featured in a special programme on BBC Radio. However, rather than just play the album versions of the songs, the band would have to head over to the recording studio in Maida Vale and create unique versions just for the programme. Now, this is where it gets interesting, because Queen were booked in to record 4 tracks from the News of the World album. The booking was from 2:30 p.m. right through until 2 a.m. And that was it. That's all the time they had. It was produced by Jeff Griffin, who said of the recording, "I should point out that we were still only recording 8 tracks at the time, and we couldn't use everyone bloody overdubbing the guitar. So I did make it very clear to Brian that I didn't want this to get out of hand. We have to be disciplined about this, because we want to get the 4 tracks done and out and mixed by the end of the session." And he said, "Yeah, okay, no problem, nothing out of hand." And we stuck to that. So I thought we could quickly play a few excerpts from the session. The first of interest is We Will Rock You. Now, when the band returned to the control room to hear it back, they were surprised to hear a female voice telling a story about Buddha at the end of their take. And this was because the tape that was being used contained remnants of a Radio 4 programme that had been recorded a few days earlier. The band thought it was great and so decided to include it.
Oh, I love it.
So have a listen to this.
Buddha rejected Brahmanism and mocked at its rituals. As for Brahma, the Buddha didn't deny his existence, but regarded him as a deluded spirit who imagined he had created the universe.
Oh, wow.
That's so good.
Very cool.
It's like White Album or something.
So there you go. So from mistakes come genius, clearly.
Mm. Sounds so cool. I agree with their choice.
Mm. So are these this is the same BBC session that's on the News of the World box set, the bonus tracks.
Absolutely, yeah.
Cool.
Because the next one I wanted to play was from It's Late, because it's completely different to the album version, because there's this amazing improvised section in the middle, which is clearly heavily inspired by Get Down, Make Love. So it's sort of a bit of a It's Late, Get Down, Make Love mashup. So,
oh, yeah.
See what you think of this.
It's late!
Amazing.
I mean, it's quite extraordinary. I think they did this in a 12-hour session. They did 4 songs.
And then this last one, this round.
Yeah. Mm. This one is especially for you, Ro, because I remember how you've fallen in love with the version of Somebody to Love from the Isle of Wight in 2016 because of the heavy section at the end that you just don't see coming.
Yeah.
So similar thing, but for Spread Your Wings.
I've genuinely got butterflies.
Serious piano playing from Fred. So have a listen to this. This is
amazing.
Queen nailing it once again.
Oh, Simon, my God. You've just taken a song that I quite like and elevated it to a song I love, like when John took gave me the Nico Case version of Misfire, and I just went, oh, no, I love this song. You've just done that to Spread Your Wings. I'm going, that's it. As far as I'm concerned, that now replaces Spread Your Wings for me forever. Thank you very much.
Considering what a talented group of musicians they are, how rarely you actually get to hear them improvising. And I think that's what makes them such a great band, is that they're always so tight, even when they're being quite elaborate with the music. But most bands with four such talented musicians in would probably go, okay, and this is the section where we kind of fool around, and this is the bit where, you know, Brian can go off on one, but they never did that because they never wanted to get too baggy. So it's a real treat to hear them sort of kicking loose.
Cut loose a bit. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And also, what is it about John Deacon's songs that can kind of handle that kind of upscaling or messing around with? You know, it's great. It's great. Fantastic. God, that. Do you know what? That is almost, as Simon says, like, you have blown my mind already, and we haven't even got to your section of the episode. And just before this episode, Simon sent us all a message going, oh, no, I'm going to try and pull out the stop. So no pressure now on what you're going to be doing later in this episode, Simon. No pressure, mate. It's got to be good, though. Yeah, it's got to be really good.
Just keep talking and let me just think about that.
Sure. I think if you are going to listen to that track, listeners, you should play it loud. Play Queen loud. So let us get on to the first track on side B of this album, which is a bonkers song called Get Down, Make Love. Craziness. So, John, is it too much?
First off, it's a song my friends would tease me about so much when I forced them to listen to Queen. They would say, "Why don't you put on that making love song?" I think perhaps 2 points I would make. Three. It's a very odd tempo for a Queen song.
Point one.
That in that sort of slow intro, it's very sort of languorous, which I guess fits with the subject matter. But it is a, it's almost too sexy.
It's too sexy. That. Is that point two?
And I think a rule perhaps with rock bands talking about sex is sort of show, don't tell. And there's an awful lot of telling going on in Get Down, Make Love. It's
and showy.
Yes, it's very Spinal Tap. In a
little bit of Smell the Glove for you.
It is a little... well, that could almost be a line from it. I think it's quite a ludicrous song, and the problem is that I don't think it knows how ludicrous it is. Well, I mean, I'm not... It's not my favourite Queen song by any stretch. It makes me sort of laugh and cringe.
Yes.
But I'm not
but
anti
how much
it.
Affection do you have for it?
I would have to say I wouldn't be I wouldn't be upset if it wasn't on News of the World.
Are you embarrassed by it?
It's very sexy, but it doesn't feel
it is very
sexy.
Sexy. Okay.
I'm not entirely convinced, despite each member being sexy in their own unique ways, that Queen are a sexy band. Do you know what I mean? And we may have discussed
you've
this
sort of
before.
Said that before. But yeah.
Like the Rolling Stones, the music sounds sexy. Like Queen music often sounds very rocky and brutal and sort of thrusty and sweaty and euphoric.
Sounds pretty sexy to me.
But I'm not entirely convinced that they're a sexy song band.
Okay.
But I'm interested to hear what everyone thinks about Get Down, Limit, Make Love, because it is one of those sort of... It's neither it's not a lost hit, let's put it that way. I'd love to know. Well, I think I'm sure Brian and Roger kind of think it's kind of ridiculous. I'd love to know. I'd love to have been a fly on the wall when Freddie first pitched the song.
All right. It's not Body Language. I can say that. But yeah, it's not hot like Body Language. I think it's a rare miss. Although, like, I feel like if it was more like the chorus, which feels a little bit more fun and... takes itself a little bit less seriously, you know, the every time I get high so I want to cool down, I think that's quite fun. And if the song had more of that mood, I think I would find it more of a pleasure to listen to. Ironically, I do not find this song a pleasure to listen to, but what I can say is listening to it in this context, I went, oh, I see how they got to Another One Bites the Dust.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which is a much
That's
hotter
a good
song.
Point. That's a good point. Some disco heat.
Do you know what? I think a good test of whether a song is sexy is could you listen to it while you were having sex? And if this came on while you were having sex, you would both look at each other, you would giggle, and then you would turn off the song.
Yeah, put Meatloaf on.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so basically, because I've had a lot of cocaine, I am now massively in love with this song, right? I'm really enjoying it. I think I wasn't that enamoured with this song when I was younger, but now I really enjoy it because it is enormously distinctive. You know, the adjective that's used for Freddie Mercury a lot is outrageous. And this is one of the things that he's done that earns him that adjective. It is an outrageous song. It's very funny. The lyrics are very funny. I think it's very tongue-in-cheek. I can feel Freddie's sense of humour in it. It is deliberately an outrageous track. It is a very unusual-sounding track. And I think there's a lot of experimentation going on it. So I'm quite the fan.
I think it's tongue-in-cheek in a literal sense. He's putting his tongue in your cheek.
What's wrong with that? Go on, Simon. What do you think?
No, I don't disagree with the general mood of the pod. I think it demonstrates a bit of a shift in Queen, and that they seem to be flexing their muscles a bit. I mean, remember this is from the 70s, so there was very much a very stuffy establishment that would have absolutely disapproved of this song,
right,
and would have been looking for any excuse to get rid of it or ban it. And I think Freddie's really clever with the lyrics in that they are, there's no ambiguity in there, but they don't feel deliberately shocking. The way he's constructed it, I think, is really clever in that he's getting his point across, but there's nothing you can take exception to because of the choice of words that he's, the way he's constructed it. So I think it's really clever, but I'm with you. I don't think they meant this to be taken seriously.
Not at all.
It
not
reminded
all.
Me a bit of Relax, really,
it's
by Frankie
jokes.
Goes to Hollywood. That
yeah,
sort of
right.
deliberately out there to sort of stir things up a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't feel quite as on the nose as Frankie Goes to Hollywood was.
Yeah,
but
I don't know.
I enjoy
I
the lyrics. I think they're funny.
Yeah.
I don't think they're intentionally funny. I don't think. I think he thought that I give you meat, would people be like, oh, yeah, but it's just like, ugh.
Also, Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood, you would put on in a club and people lose their minds and dance that. My question about this song is, when would you listen to Get Down, Make Love?
Like, straight after Body Language.
Yeah, I think perhaps...
During the act of lovemaking, like the instructions are clear.
The instructions...
Okay, shall we move on?
I think
we should just move on. But just before we do, I do want to treat you to something, just a little something, if you'll indulge me. Because are you guys familiar with the work of Mr. Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails?
I know they've done a version of
this. They have covered this song, and I thought you might like to hear a little bit of it.
Yes, please.
Go on.
Now tell me that song isn't sexy, guys. That's about as sexy as it gets, right?
I wonder if the problem is that the term make love is not a sexy term. It's a sort of polite,
romantic,
slightly poetic term. But it's not sort of doesn't get you going.
Especially,
when we get home, I'm going to immediately make love to you.
Inside our bed.
Yeah.
It's like a song that's going like, so you can sit there and imagine doing it in a bed.
Can I, if this is the first of the Queen Pod you're listening to, listener, please stick with us. This isn't normally what it's like.
Oh, we're big fans
like
of the band.
It's like this for another hour and a half.
Yeah.
So, we are. Look, I am going to draw a tiny bit of attention to the skill that they put into this, because we are still in the era of albums where they put no synthesizers. Were used in making this album, right? And so all those crazy psychedelic sound effects you're hearing, obviously not produced on the synth, it's Brian creating them on his Red Special with an Electro-Harmonics frequency analyzer pedal, and he's doing that live while the studio recording uses an Eventide harmonizer. I don't know what any of that means, but Brian explains the harmonizer sound effects to BBC. He explained it to BBC Radio 1 in 83 and said, "That's the harmonizer thing which I use. I've used it as a noise rather than a musical thing. It's controlled because I had a special little pedal made, which means I can change the interval at which the harmonizer comes back and the harmonizer's fed back on itself. So it makes all these swooping noises. And it's just an exercise in using that together with Freddie's noises. It's sort of an erotic interlude." Right, so, it is sexy. That's clearly ironic. Brian said so.
It's official.
I feel like we've covered this song in all kinds of glory. So, let us get on to Love of Our Lives. So, This is the section of the show where I touch upon a little listener letter. And we've been getting all this lovely feedback from you guys out there. Just talking a little bit about what you guys are going through. And it's amazing that we're sharing what we're doing with you guys, and you guys are getting something out of this. This is a lovely letter we got from Trish Kohut, entitled My Queen Story. And she's so nice. She says, to all of the wonderful people at the Queen Pod, hello, my name is Trish. I'm 22 years old, and I've been a Queen fan since practically my birth. My parents were constantly playing the Queen Greatest Hits CDs while I was growing up, and Queen Live at Wembley 86 seemed to always be on my TV. Once I got into middle school, I took the time to listen to their entire discography from start to finish. This is where I believe my adoration for Queen truly began to flourish. I proceeded to watch every interview and concert film I could get my hands on, and I very quickly became a super fan. However, I didn't just admire Queen for their music. At this time in my life, I was picked on a lot in school and didn't have a lot of confidence in myself. I was always in my own head and cared way too much about what other people thought of me. By immersing myself in all things Queen-related, I was seeing how Freddie and the band carried themselves, and it had a really big impact on me. Freddie in particular stood out the most because he didn't care if people thought he was strange or if people didn't like him. He fully embraced being himself, and seeing this made me realise that if Freddie is happy and okay with being himself, then I should be too. As I've grown older, my love for Queen has only increased and my confidence has risen with it. Listening to Queen gives me a power that I didn't know I had, and I definitely wouldn't be the person I am today without them. I've seen Queen and Adam Lambert in concert twice, and this is why I'm reading it on this episode. And I recently had Spread Your Wings tattooed on my arm in Freddie's handwriting as the perfect homage to my favourite band and my own personal journey. Thank you all for putting together and producing this amazing podcast. Thank you. That's a very nice thing to say, Trish. I never miss an episode. It's such a nice feeling to be able to listen to people other than myself geek out about the best band there ever was. Keep on tearing it up, because this pod is truly a kind of magic. Cheers, Trish. How nice. Oh, thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
So nice of you.
Speaking of Queen and Adam Lambert, which Trish mentioned there, I was going to say Get Down, Make Love was the one track. They let Adam choose a track for the live show. I mean, obviously all three of them sort of put the set list together, but they said you can have a sort of free choice. And when they played that at the O2, if you'd asked me what non-greatest hit Queen were going to play at the O2, it would have been the last song I would have suggested. And then suddenly, in front of all these people who just, I know, finished sort of rocking out to Bicycle Race or Don't Stop Me Now, suddenly they went into Get Down, Make Love. It was such a great moment because you could tell that it was the first time some of those people were hearing that song.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a really nice moment as a Queen fan.
Yeah, it's amazing when they pull these tracks out from the back catalogue, and what a naughty one to pull out. I think it's amazing. So thank you so much, Trish. Okay, listen, let's have some more Patreon thank you. Simon.
I would like to send huge thanks to Angela Lant, Tim Robinson and Paul Fitzgerald, who are all heroes in my eyes.
Yay! Thanks,
thank
guys.
Thank you, guys.
That's so nice. Yes, lovely. Patreon.com/QueenPod and get yourself shouted out on this pod. How nice. Okay, let's get back to the works with a lovely song called Sleeping on the Sidewalk by Brian May. It's 3 minutes and 7 seconds long and it is groovy.
Now tell me what happened. I took me to a room without a table. Said, throw your trumpet in the air. Played around as well as I was able. Soon we had the record of the year. I was a legend all through the land. While I was blowing to a million fans. Nothing was missing. All the people wanted to listen. You thought I was a heavy man. Like a princess, never touch the road. I don't get hungry and I sure don't wanna go home. And that's so fun. We'll
Wow, what a track. Do you guys know that this is the only Queen song to be recorded in one take?
I read that and I didn't understand if that meant every single
not the
member
vocals.
Was there.
Not the vocals. The vocals are added later.
Okay.
But the actual, yeah. So Brian, again, in that 1983 BBC Radio 1 interview, he said, "That was the quickest song I ever wrote in my life. I just wrote it down. It's funny because it's one of the ones I'm quite pleased with as well. It's not trying too hard. It's not highly subtle, but I think it leaves me with quite a good feeling. It was a sort of one take thing as well, although I messed around with the take a lot and chopped it about and rearranged it. It was basically the first take which we used. So it has that kind of sloppy feel that I think works with the song, which we never would have dreamed with the previous albums. We always used to work on the backing tracks until they were 1,000,000% perfect. And if they weren't, we would splice together two which were, would go to great lengths. But for this album, we wanted to get that spontaneity back in." Apparently, John plays a couple of wrong notes in there. You can hear Brian laughing right at the end of the track. It's very cool.
I'm really fond of this one. And you know, it really doesn't come as a surprise that Brian would have come up with this, because I imagine if you are a rock guitarist that you just love the blues, you know, a 12-bar blues.
Of course,
and, just playing that kind of wandering bass line and, you know, just fooling
around. Yeah, the walking bass. John,
yeah,
Roger and Brian are incredible on this track. Right?
You just get to noodle on top of it and play around. And it's one of those ones that feels very improvised, even though clearly it's not. But it just, as he says, it feels loose. I think the other thing that's really interesting as well is we should remember that this album was... It was at this time that the band were making a really concerted effort to crack America. And I think this song is a bit of a nod to that audience and gone, they would like this across the pond. And I think that's really, you know, because they did that later with Crazy Little Thing Called Love,
sure,
which is which was their first number one in the States. And, you know, that Elvis could have sung that easily.
Yeah, it's got that American sound. Yeah, for sure.
So,
a lot of this album does.
I love it. And, you know, it's just the band rocking out and having fun. I think it's great.
Mm. I've got the deluxe edition of this album and it's got an offcut on it called Feelings, Feelings. And I presume they were picking between that and this to include on the album. So if one stayed, the other one went. And then when I listened to this for this podcast, I figured they'd chosen that because it's kind of like Queen's story, but distilled down to this brass player. Mm. And then I went, that's why they chose that. But I like it. I think it's a really fun track. And it's one of those tracks you're like, I'll play you this. You know, that's Queen. And people would go, ooh.
Yeah. The thing that occurred to me is, you know, it doesn't have to be about a trumpet player. The man plays the guitar. He can make it about a guitar player, but he makes it about a trumpet player so that he can make his guitar sound like a trumpet. It's amazing. Yeah. John, where are you on this track?
I really like it. I think, like Simon said, the word is fond. I'm really fond of this track. I think it's really sweet. It's not too complex. It doesn't, like Brian said, it sort of doesn't take itself too seriously. It is right that it was recorded in that quite spontaneous way. But I think what's interesting about sort of today's discussion and is going to continue to be is that I think this is the most un-Queen side of any Queen album. And the songs are so different from what we are used to up till now. Mm. We've got like five different styles. And they're also styles that we never really see again in Queen. So the closest really to Sleeping on the Sidewalk is probably their rock and roll medley that they do live. Mm. What we're going to go on to talk about, Who Needs You and My Melancholy Blues. And if you took, and even It's Late is kind of quite an epic song. And each of them is so different that it feels like sort of Queen on this half of the album are, like you say, sort of stretching their genre muscles a bit and saying we can dip into there and there. And there's a lot of what Suze was saying about songs that you would play someone and they would go, is this Queen?
Mm.
So I think that's what makes it really interesting side of the album. And you get lots of, I bet there are more different opinions amongst Queen fans about this side of this album than there are about many others.
I got to say, I prefer this side of the album to side A. Well, I'll say that much. I really enjoy this side of the album. I think it's wonderful. I have a lot of fun with these tracks. I think they're all great fun. I think for a lot of the reasons that you're saying, they are quite unusual. There's a couple of tracks on this album that I'm less enamoured with, but big fan of Get Down, Make Love, what can I say? I think it's time to play a game. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
All right, please. Then, let's do that.
Play the game, play the game, play the game.
Hey, gang.
Hey,
John. Hi.
Listener Joe Schiermacher has written in asking, if Freddie were alive today, what do you think he'd be doing?
Well, I think he'd be an absolute superstar. John mentioned a couple of pods ago that he would be a guest judge on RuPaul's Drag Race. I love that idea so much.
I would love to see Freddie on
Drag Race. I think he'd be fantastic. Yeah, it'd just be a wonderful presence to have. Yeah. I wonder if they might have gone through a period where maybe they were less cool and then super cool again more recently, you know what I mean? That kind of thing that happened to Bowie and to Elton John, you know, but then like, even Rod Stewart's called out. And there was definitely a period where Rod was maybe not quite as universally considered as cool as he was in his youth, you know.
Yeah.
I wonder. Mm. But I think he'd be doing immense things.
Yeah, we've touched on this before. I think he would have written an opera or a musical or something like that. He would have. I think he'd probably be doing more writing and producing stuff. I'm not sure he would have carried on performing because he's such an energetic performer, and it's hard to do that, you know, the older you get. And if he couldn't manage that level, I'm not sure he would have wanted to. But then, would he have been able to get rid of the bug of walking out in front of thousands of people and having people adore him? Probably not. So
absolutely.
I think he would have he'd be an absolute national treasure.
Yeah, definitely.
He would be on that list of national treasures up there with Stephen Fry and Miriam Margolyes and all those people that, you know, everyone just Kathy Burke, people that people universally love. I think he would probably be involved in theatre and in opera, and I wonder if he would be doing more recording as opposed to performing. I'd love to think there was another collaboration with Montserrat Caballé somewhere down the line.
He was also passionate about art and fashion, wasn't he?
Oh, he'd have such an insane art collection.
Yeah.
And I can see him as someone who would have sort of wanted to be involved in maybe having a production company for theatre or dance or something. And I think he would have been dressed so well.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Because
would he have been a guest host on Have I Got News For You? Like, what kind of stuff would he be? What would we be seeing him in? Would he be doing, like, documentaries and...
I'm not sure he would want to be himself on TV too much. He doesn't strike me as the sort of person that was particularly comfortable talking outside of his... You know, he did very few interviews. He's often quite shy in them. I don't know. It's whether he would have wanted to be a TV personality. I don't know how he would have got around to that. I don't think he'd be a sort of big social media user or anything like that. I'm sure he'd have said something. I haven't got time for that, my dear.
I think he would have moved into that space, you know, a bit like Tom Jones is now. It just doesn't matter how old you are. You just can't help but love Tom Jones. He's in the national treasure category. And I think Freddie would have been treated in a similar way, just of recognising that here's someone who's just supremely talented. And you just say, go on, Freddie, give us a tune. And he'd just belt something out and just leave everyone with their jaws on the floor.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I would love him as a judge on The Masked Singer as well, please. It'd be so good. It'd just be
great as a contestant.
He'd be a great contestant.
I mean, literally, everyone would go, well, that's Freddie Mercury. Like, yes, genuinely. Any singer that you're ever going to have on The Masked Singer, Freddie is the only one. There's no point.
Unless he went on and did that, like, because on the Barcelona album, there's a song called "Exercises in Free Love" where he's singing the soprano line, and you wouldn't know it was Freddie. You wouldn't know it was a guy singing that.
Maybe
he's top A's. So maybe he'd be like that, and people would be like, "Ooh, it's Leslie Garrett."
Be very funny if he came on episode one and wearing, I don't know, like a Christmas tree costume and just went, "Hey!" Like, the director's just got his head in his hands. Oh, God.
God, I
whatever
miss
he's
him
doing,
so
he's being a legend. That's for sure.
Yeah, I want him. I like the idea because like he was on that Kenny Everett radio show. That was so funny, and it reminded me of like it's kind of the closest thing we've got from the 70s to like a modern podcast, like a loose modern podcast. So I bet he'd have ended up on some podcast with like Elton John having a couple of drinks. Well, Elton wouldn't he? But kicking back, and they'd be, people would go, oh my God, have you heard that podcast where that episode where Freddie Mercury was on? It's the funniest thing. I didn't know he was so funny. And he'd get known for being so funny. And he'd probably go on Question Time and do a big swear.
Oh, yes. Freddie Mercury on Question Time, please. That would be awesome.
Brian's been on. Have you? And like, have you seen that? What's that show called where Simon Day is an old prog rock? He's called Brian Pearl. I can't remember what the show's called. It's
Brian
really
Pearl
funny.
Is
but
the, yeah.
Yeah, but Roger Taylor shows up on that playing himself, playing like a version of himself a couple of times, and he's so funny. And I like the idea of Freddie showing up on stuff like
I
that.
I think Freddie
like
might
a
have
fun version of himself.
Yeah, maybe turned up on extras or something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
I think he would have been hanging out with, because he loved Kenny Everett and people like that. He really enjoyed the company of comedians, didn't he? And Yeah, amazing. Amazing. What a beautiful idea. It's so sad that he is not here with us still.
Yeah.
Because anything that he'd have been up to would have been exciting and compelling and just always, always breathtaking. What a guy. And thank you so much, Joe, for that question. Certainly tugs at the heartstrings, that one. But I also want to give at this point a little shout out to one Tony Stewart Brown, whose Insta tag is at tonysb.art, who, bless him, you guys all see this, haven't you? That Hot Space album cover with our faces on.
Yeah.
And he's given me a Freddy moustache and everything. I just love him. So,
he's brilliant.
Where was he when I was trying to do my tour poster?
Yeah, but he heard that you were on version 27 of that, and he just doesn't need that.
We love it. We love it. We definitely want to make T-shirts of those. So thank you, Tony. And, listeners, go check out at tonysb.art. All of his stuff is so cool. And it's so different to the stuff that he normally does. So, thanks for putting out the stops on that, man. It really, really put a huge grin on our faces. Listen, John, how do you feel about thanking a few Patreons?
I would like to say thank you. A big thank you to Alexander Small. Another thank you to Christine Warrington. And a very special thank you to Lucky Lulu Green.
Lucky Lulu.
Thanks, Lucky Lulu. Hooray. Thanks, Christine. Thanks, Alexander.
Thank you so much, guys. All right, listen, let's get back to these songs. We're into John Deacon's second song on this album, which is Who Needs You?
I was pushed around.
go. Jolly little ditty from John Deacon. Suze, where do you stand on Who Needs You?
It's like the shady, cheeky, blasé version of Build Me Up Buttercup. Oh. So you know how, like, Build Me Up Buttercup is a song I love. It's one of my favourite songs. But it's very like, wah. And this song is the same subject matter, but it's more like, nah. So... it's the shadiest Deaky track. It's throwing shade and side eyes to some melon twisting hussy.
Sorry, do you like this?
I really like it. I really like it. That was my rundown of what I think of it, and also my mark out of 10 is pretty great.
Okay, perfect. That's yeah. Great. That's so good. So, Simon, you put this in your top 10 John Deacon songs, right? Round about number 8, if I remember right. Was that about there?
I like it. I mean, it's interesting because we've sort of not really talked about what you might regard as filler on an album. I mean, I don't think this ever was intended to be or considered as a single or anything like that. But I don't want to think that filler is a derogatory term. I think it's just a great little ditty. And I'm not sure if there's any other Queen song where the mood of the lyrics is so different to the mood of a melody.
Yeah, actually, the lyrics are really quite
yeah,
dark.
But it works yeah. so well. And, yeah. and you've got Brian on maracas, you've got Freddie on a cowbell. And
yeah,
you just kind of think, you know... Do I think, oh, I can't wait for the Grammys or the Brit Awards or the Ivor Novellos to come flooding in for this one? No. But does it make me smile and think, oh, you guys? Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I think it's great. I love
it. You certainly feel that Freddie really enjoys this. He always seems to enjoy John Deacon songs, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, John writes very well for Freddie's voice.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
That's a very true point. Where are you, Mr. Robbins, on Who Needs You?
Well, I think it's really good that Simon has... made that point about the term filler, because I don't think it's a criticism or a necessary negative, because let's face it, every artist, every band who's ever made an album knows you can't write 12 number one singles. Mm. It's not possible. And an album needs to have different moods, and it needs to have sort of pauses and lulls and more relaxing bits and different pace and rhythm and tempo. So whereas... like the first four albums. Well, actually, what I mean by that is Queen 1, Queen 2 and Night of the Opera are... everything is working towards the whole of that. It's sort of all killer, no filler. But I think, even though this is what I might call a slight song, I really like it. And if I was going to direct the music video, we would be on a beachfront bar in Cuba, in Havana.
Yeah.
Freddie would be wearing a white linen suit with a Panama hat.
Oh, yeah.
And Roger, Brian and John would be standing next to him like a mariachi band.
Really red sleeves.
And Freddie would be walking through the bar, sipping his martini, turning to greet people while he sang to camera.
Oh, my God.
And the three of them would just be following him around. Brian with his little sort of Spanish guitar, Roger with his maracas, and John with, I don't know how we're going to get a very small portable bass, but maybe a little acoustic bass. And I just think it would be absolutely delightful. And he sort of passes a barman who's shaking up a rum punch. I can just see it.
John, I like it.
It's an amazing video. That's an amazing vision. John, you've got this ability for John Deacon tracks that I'm less enamoured with. You improve them somehow so wonderfully for me. Thank you. That is an image I'm not going to get out of my head. So as Simon mentioned, Brian and is on the maracas, Freddie's on the cowbell. And it's John and Brian playing Spanish guitars on the track, with Brian playing his electric guitar entirely on the left channel and Freddie's vocals entirely on the right. So I think there's a playfulness to the whole song. It is lovely that they're doing a little calypso in the middle of nowhere, just out of nowhere, on quite a rocky album. It's still stripped back in keeping with the sound of the whole album. And it is fun. It's fun. It's really, really fun. It's nice for them to stop and just do a little cheeky little calypso number like this. So I have no issues with it. But would I listen to it that often? Probably not. Probably not.
Brian also fits in quite a lot of different guitar styles on this. If you listen to just the guitar sort of tracks, he's got the Spanish guitar, he's got those wonderful little harmonics that I'd actually not noticed until you played it that time, which is one thing.
Right.
One of the many things I love about this show is you suddenly hear something, you're like, oh, yes. I never noticed those little harmonics before. And then he's got the more sort of, I don't know what he's using there. It's almost like a volume pedal with that. With I won't even try and replicate it with my mouth. but he's got that more sort of phased sound, and then he's got that really nice sound right at the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah. It's lovely. That then brings us so neatly to Simon Says, because he's guaranteed to blow your mind.
Guaranteed to blow your mind.
Well, here we go. I'm going to start with a track that Sue's alluded to earlier on, because it's on the News of the World box set, and as a bonus disc. It is a song called Feelings, Feelings, which I thought we had to mention at some point in this pod. This was originally a song written by Brian in 1971 called Feelings, but it didn't really progress beyond just essentially a guitar and drum jam. So they revisited it in 1977 during the News of the World recording sessions, and worked on it, and it became Feelings, Feelings. And there was take 10 of the session was released in the 2017 40th anniversary box set. I believe that take 9 is also out there if you go hunting for it, with slightly different lyrics if you're that interested. But as you know, the song ultimately didn't make the album, so never got the full Queen treatment, as it were. But it's interesting nonetheless, so I thought we should indulge in a little clip of Feelings, Feelings.
I don't think I've ever heard that before.
Well, it is a curiosity, but it's the one that just missed out on the album. So there's a debate maybe to have as to would you take a track out and replace it with a fully worked out Feelings, Feelings. Let's not go there, people, but one for the pub maybe one day.
Well, I don't think I would. I don't think I would put it in, because as much as Get Down, Make Love is not my favourite Queen song, it is... I like that it exists.
It's part of this album, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so another little treat for you here. I stumbled across this courtesy of Mr. Greg Brooks. It's a really unusual live version of Spread Your Wings. And I know we've featured Spread Your Wings a lot, and so I ummed and ahed, but I think this is worth showing. I have no idea where this is from. It doesn't say which tour. Sort of Spread Your Wings sort of faded in and out of the set list and was still there in the early 80s. But I suspect this is probably late 70s when this one was done. And it's just completely different, and I thought would be something fun to share. So have a listen to this.
Thank you.
want to hear the rest.
That's great.
So good. I've got all goosebumps and everything.
I just love it. It's just them having fun, messing around with the song. But, you know, if that was late 70s, so when Spread Your Wings was a really well-known track, to turn up at a gig and have them play it totally differently, I think it's just great and what makes the live experience so special and unique.
Do you think they did that because Elton John was in the audience, maybe?
Possibly, although actually Saturday Night was a song that they did quite a lot. It was never part sort of a permanent member of the set list. But if you look at tours right the way up into the 80s, it got played occasionally. I think it was one of those tracks they just enjoyed riffing with.
Oh, wow.
I had no idea, right.
Because that came out early 70s, didn't it, Saturday Night?
It was
early 70s. So, you know, 10 years later, they're still having fun with it. But maybe you're right. Mm. Maybe that was the one where Elton turns up and they thought, here you go, Elton, here's one for you.
Oh, wow, what a treat. What an absolute treat. A round of applause for Mr. Simon Lupton.
Thank you very much.
What a treat. Those were stops pulled out, sir. Never saw that coming. Thank you very, very much. Genuine treats. How brilliant. All right, listen, let's get on to this monster. It's so big.
Yes.
It's so big. It's so good. It's a Brian May epic. It's 6.5 minutes long, listeners. And it's called It's Late. I think to tackle this, I'm going to play like the opening of the song because it's an amazing opening to any song. John's mentioned it before. Let's listen to a nice old chunk of it there. And then I kind of want to play a bit from the end as well. Just so for the record, if listeners, if you haven't listened to this song, the middle bit is also amazing. So just listen to all of it. But let's start by listening to the open of this glorious track. Like one of the best riffs in all of Queen. It's like a Now I'm Here type level riff, isn't it? And that it's that moment right at the beginning of the song. I think you mentioned it before, John, where he sort of plays those initial chords and it just goes ding ding, and you know it's all about to go. And it's so beautiful. I love it. Let's listen to how completely bonkers it gets as well, shall we, towards the end of the song, and then we can get a nice little chat in about it.
I know that I can't.
Wow.
Good Lord. Oh, my God. Well,
do you know the, the best way to listen to that song is, Ro?
I think you play it loud, mate.
Yeah, loud.
Really loud.
PQL.
Play loud. Queen loud.
Hashtag PQL.
Yes, mate. Hashtag PQL. I mean, it's absolutely right. Well, that is a huge track. You know what, John? You were saying, you know, about opening the album with We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions, and how really you should be finishing the album with that. But actually, they're finishing with It's Late and My Melancholy Blues, and I have no issues with that, because this is a huge, huge number with a, you know, almost with My Melancholy Blues almost as like a afterglowy type kind of epilogue song, you know. It's amazing. And I love how, I mean, that last section, I mean, there is more madness in that song, and I encourage all listeners to go and listen to the whole thing. But Deaky's bass is going, I mean, it's screaming like a guitar in a lot of that when it goes really fast and mad in the end of that section. And also, just Roger is insane through this. It's like a studio version of a live number for me. It's a huge epic rock number. But let us hear what Suze Kempner has to say about It's Late.
I think we've talked before about how this is the last Queen epic for a while. Probably until, are we going to say, innuendo? So it's like an end of an era number. And it feels like a distillation of the best stuff from every album that's come before it in one song. And it's such a complete work. It's Late. It doesn't feel at all bitty. It doesn't feel self-indulgent despite the runtime. And it's really euphoric and confident. And it feels like they've earned this song so much. Like, it could have closed the album.
That is great. It is a gorgeous rocker. Simon, where are you on It's Late? Well, obviously positive.
Yeah, I think I might even put this in sort of in my top 10 of sort of album sort of tracks. If I think it's, there's so much like it. As you mentioned, the riff is just to die for. The bass line is really, really good. God bless John Deacon. It's classic Deaky. But Roger's, and I love that bit at the end, the triplets on the Roger's kicking out in on the drums is just mesmerizing to listen to. I had a real special moment with this song when we were actually working on the Queen Rock the World documentary, because we had a sequence in there where we needed to give the impression that the band was sort of going from venue to venue on this sort of massive tour. And it was one of those moments where the editor, a brilliant editor called Christopher Bird, just sort of said to me, you wander off for a bit, leave this with me, I'll do something. And I came back and he had edited this montage sequence together with to It's Late. And it was one of those things where it's like, do not touch a frame of that. It was brilliant. He did such an amazing job, and the song just worked so well with it. It was great.
That is a glorious anecdote, Simon. It's some good editing stories. I like it very much. I like it very much. John, It's Late. It's a monster, isn't it?
It's an enormous, beautiful monster that I love to bits. When I bought News of the World on CD when I was 12, it was my 12th birthday and I had £30 in birthday money. And I went to HMV in Bristol and they had a gold CD. Now, I am not sure to what extent there was any gold in the CD. There was a special kind of like audio file release of News of the World, and it had different CD packaging. And because it was gold, I obviously had to buy it, but it was all the money I had. And I remember buying it, and I got so stressed by the whole decision that I started to cry on the way home.
Oh, John!
Because I'd spent all my birthday money on this gold, in inverted commas, edition. But then I opened it, and it had a... You know, in the middle of CD cases, they have those little sort of teeth that always break.
Yeah.
Well, this had a system I'd never seen before, where it was like two plastic arms that, as you lifted the CDs up, the arms went like that and released the CD.
Right, yeah.
And I remember that cheered me up a bit. But I remember hearing It's Late and just thinking it was just amazing. And that guitar tone at the start, well, the guitar tone Brian uses all the way through. When I first got my Brian copy guitar, I was sort of fiddling around with it, and I couldn't really play guitar, and I couldn't make it sound like he made it sound, and I didn't have the same amp as him, and I didn't have the effects or anything. But there's a setting on it that anyone who has one of those guitars will know, and I can't remember which one it is, but it's with the sort of pickup phasing settings. There's a certain switch location where you put it on and it's immediately It's Late. It's that exact tone that he uses. And I remember just sort of almost strumming the strings open and going, oh my God, I sound just like Brian does on It's Late. So I always absolutely adore that intro. I think the song's great. And that's such an interesting point Sue's made. I never really thought that this is their last big track before Innuendo.
I guess it sort of is. The sort of one that's sort of over 6 minutes. Yeah, it kind of is. I can't think of one. I think they've done sort of maybe...
As we go on through the next few albums, maybe there'll be another one.
Yeah, maybe.
And you go, oh. But I can't think of one.
No.
It's interesting, because I noticed when listening to it for this, I was reading the lyrics off my old vinyl, and instead of splitting into verses, it says on there each verse is scene one, then it's scene two, and scene three.
It's a three-act structure, right?
Yeah, but I love the fact that it's the only song on the album where they've sort of done anything like that, and they draw attention to the fact that it's a big old number.
Mm. Brian kind of uses this two-handed tapping technique, which is when a guitarist hammers strings on the fretboard. Actually, probably producer Giles could explain this better than me. But a guitarist hammers strings on the fretboard with fingers from both hands to create a melodic counterpoint. And that became enormously popular when Eddie Van Halen used it on his debut album Van Halen in 1978, a few months after Brian used it on this song. And of course, they were good mates as well, right? But it wasn't invented by Brian, that technique. He said... I stole it from a guy called Rocky Athas, who said that he stole it from Billy Gibbons in ZZ Top. He was playing in some club in Texas doing hammering stuff. I was so intrigued by it, I went home and played around with it for ages and put it on It's Late. It was a sort of double hammer. I was fretting with my left hand, hammering with another finger off the left hand, and then hammering with the right hand as well. It was a problem to do on stage. I found it was a bit too stiff. It's okay if you're sitting down with the guitar, and I reckon if I persevered with it, it would probably become second nature, but it wasn't an alleyway which led very far to my way of thinking. It's a bit gimmicky. But he has used it here, and it's a beautiful thing, right? It's a gorgeous, gorgeous sound.
What else is there to say about It's Late other than play Queen loud? Has everyone said what they want to say about It's Late? Should we move on?
Yeah, we could go on forever, couldn't we?
We could. It is time for News of the World, and there's a lot of news to get through. Here we go!
Come on, honey!
We have Brian May presenting the world's leading astronomy festival, Astrofest, as it goes virtual for the first time, which is on the 22nd of April at 7:30. Brian shares how 3D imagery is expanding our understanding of the cosmos. I believe it rocks. He will discuss his latest astrostereoscopic books and reveal new stereos from his work with current NASA missions, including the Perseverance Mars rover...
Ooh.
God, I love Dr. Brian May. I love him. Now, The rather rare Radio Gaga extended remix is going to feature on a new Now compilation album. Now, that's what I call 12-inch 80s, which is a 4-CD box that's going to come out on the 16th of April in the UK. It is only that version, the extended remix of Radio Gaga, has only been made available in the 1992 mail order release of Box of Tricks and the 91 Hollywood Records US version of the works. It's not available on streaming services, and it is naturally track one, disc one of the new Now release. So that is exciting. Find that. And
am I right in thinking, sorry to interrupt, when Queen are on compilation albums, they agreed to be on them, but they always had to be the first track?
Yeah. That was.
I love that.
That's a Jim Beach manoeuvre all over, isn't it? We love it.
Such a great, such a great ploy.
Yeah,
it's so good. Now, here's the big news. 25th of March. This is hot off the press. This has happened today. It has been announced that Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody has reached the rare RIAA diamond status with more than 10 million US sales and stream equivalents. Which means that Queen has become the first British band in music history to earn the Diamond Song Award. The iconic song has been officially certified diamond by the Recording Industry Association of America. Brian has said, "This is incredible news. At times like this, I have to pinch myself to be sure it's real. All those wild dreams we had, this is beyond any of them. Huge thanks to all of those that believed in us over the years." And Roger said, "It's wonderful and gratifying thought to know the song has reached out and connected with so many people. We thank you all. Onwards," which is very, very cool. It was named the most streamed song of the 20th century. Its companion video recently passed 1 billion views on YouTube, which has made history as the first pre-1990s video to reach 1 billion views on the platform. The band's blockbuster compilation, Platinum Collection, Volume 1 to 3, has also just been certified 5 times platinum. These boys are able to sell some records, aren't they?
They certainly
I love
are.
The fact that they are the first British band to achieve that. You know, here we are, 50 yeah. years after they started, still yeah. pioneering.
They're the best. Mm. They are the best. We also have a very exciting bit of news from Brian May and one Kerry Ellis. Is that right, Simon?
Yes. They have released a single called Panic Attack. It's a reworking of a song they'd previously done on their Golden Days album, I believe. But it's got new lyrics with it that are really pertinent to the situation that we're in now, and you know what we've been going through over the last year, and it's a really upbeat, great track. And Brian and Kerry launched it live themselves on Instagram, which is very exciting.
Brilliant. Well, by the time you're listening to this, it will be available for you to check out. So go check out some lovely new stuff. Panic Attack 2021, right? Wonderful. Listen, let us get back to the works for the final track on this album. It is a beautiful song. It's by Freddie Mercury. It's 3.5 minutes long, and it is called My Melancholy Blues.
Left cold sober, baby left me for somebody new. I don't want to talk about it, want to forget about it, want to be intoxicated with that special brew. So come and get me, let me get in that sinking feeling that says my heart is on an all-time low. So don't expect me. And
guardian of the cast. Don't try and stop me, 'cause I'm heading for that stormy weather soon. I'm causing a mild sensation with this new occupation. I'm permanently glued to this extraordinary mood. So now move over and let me take over.
Gorgeous honey, is it not? Now, Suze and John, you have been talking about my melancholy blues ever since this podcast started. Come on, Suze, launch in, mate.
Oh, wow. Okay. My melancholy blues is really special to me. So I used to have a job playing piano on cruise ships, and I'd throw songs like this and Spread Your Wings and Nevermore in, mainly for myself. And my melancholy blues was the one song that people would come up like in a break and go, right, that one you played about 10 minutes ago, what was that? Because it's like I was there to provide background songs, but that song obviously made people go, ooh, what's that? They'd go, it's amazing, what song is that? And I would feel so proud that I could tell them it was Queen. And I don't know what the hell I was proud for. I didn't chuff and write it. I didn't rearrange it. I didn't even change the key. But so there's nothing for me to be really proud of. But what I was proud of was that a deep cut Queen song got people like listening. And I just think it's such a special song. It's also a song that we had a live version on the single of The Miracle. There was a live version from 77 is on this single for The Miracle. So I've had this song in my life since I was 5. Yeah, and it's very special.
I think it's my favourite Queen song.
Oh!
I think it is. I think it's absolutely... I mean, there's an awful lot of sort of very close ties, but I think if I were able to orchestrate it so, I think if I knew I only had one Queen song to listen to before I shuffled off this mortal coil, I think it would probably be my Melancholy Blues. Mm. And it's so unlike anything else Queen ever did. And it feels very Freddie.
Personal as well, right? Very personally Freddie.
Yeah, and we were talking about, you know, what would Freddie be doing if were he still alive, and I can imagine him singing this sort of song somehow, somewhere.
Mm.
I would love to know, it's so hard to sing, and I would love to know Suze's take on Freddie's voice in this song, because he's going through such a sort of change in range.
Mm-hmm.
And I like try singing it in the shower, and... It's so quickly it becomes undoable, and you wouldn't listen to it and think, oh my God, that's a voice at its absolute sort of maximum capacity, but it is so hard to sing.
Yeah. So the reason for that is that every voice has the break, and it's not the top of your range, it's sort of the top third of the range, it'll break. On women, it's around a D, E flat, E. On men, it's about two thirds of an octave lower on that. Freddie covers his break. Like the pinnacle of singing is the invisible break, so someone who covers their whole break. And Freddie does that. In this, he's using his break, so the voice is... You can hear when the voice is semi-flipping into falsetto, but because it's Freddie, it feels like one cohesive whole, the vocal performance. It's almost a shame to break his singing down into the technicalities in this particular song, but that's what's going on. And that's why it's so hard to sing. The tessitura of it is sitting so much of it around the male vocal break, and he covers that. So it sounds effortless, but it also sounds fragile. And I love a voice in danger. And I think that's why I love Freddie's voice so much, because quite often he's on the edge and he's using that to be very vulnerable in this song.
It's got such an end of the night feel, hasn't it? It's just that.
Set 'em up, Joe.
I can just imagine him. Like when I hear this song, I imagine him sort of coming home to one of those big sort of London townhouses and putting a silk scarf down and taking off his jacket and turning on the lights and pouring himself a vodka or something. It's just got such, it's so
really
much
evocative.
Its title.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I've always kind of, similar to you, John, I've always thought it was kind of like, you know, at the end of one of his parties, there's him left with maybe a couple of people that just refuse to leave at the end, and they're all like ties off, and he's just chilling out and just entertaining them with this little song. What do you think, Simon?
Yeah. I'm exactly that. Yeah, it's an intimate song, isn't it? And you just feel like it's just you and the band left.
Yeah.
Maybe a few waiters clearing some tables, hoping you'll just sod off in a minute so they can go home. But we're going to have one last whiskey for the road, aren't we, while Freddie just tinkles on the piano. I love it. And a little special mention. I think this might be... Is this the only Queen track where Roger plays the drums with brushes? Might be, possibly.
Oh, could be.
But
One thing I've got on that is that the first 50 seconds of the song apparently are free time. After which
Recitative, which is you don't really find it in jazz. It's in jazz or blues. That's a real classical thing to have a recit section, but it doesn't feel out of place with the song.
Unbelievable. Yeah, and then apparently Roger counts in, and the rest of the song's then in beat. Although you don't hear him counting in, obviously, on the track. Mm-hmm. The song doesn't have any backing vocals or guitar, but Suze. That a version of the song that you were talking about from the 28th of October 1977, the BBC sessions, which Simon played us some clips from earlier, you can hear some Brian playing along with it. And I just thought we could listen to the second half of the song.
Great.
Because this was one of the songs where I was just like, can we just play the whole song? So I've done worked it around this way. So we can hear this with guitar now.
Let me take all my Charlie
Freddie's laugh at the end. I love it. It sounds beautiful. I always love it when they refer to the ending of the song coming up. That coming to my enclosure is so fun. And I think Roger does it on I'm in Love with My Car, right? He goes, and this is the end now. You know, I'm just always tickled by that.
I love those quite rare moments where Freddie's voice becomes incredibly intimate.
Yes.
And it's like he's right in your ear.
Yeah.
And obviously so many Queen songs are so big and bold and so sort of forceful that just to have him almost like he's sat next to you, I absolutely adore it. And Brian's guitar there. Yes. Brian's guitar there sounds like a Jimi Hendrix solo played at a tenth of the speed.
Yes, yeah.
Glorious. I don't know what else there is to say about this wonderful, wonderful track. It is a beautiful thing. I could talk about it for hours. But listen, it is time for the toughest bit of the show. It is time for the Queen de la Queen.
Made in heaven, made in heaven.
All right, guys, buckle up. Simon doesn't look as comfortable as he did last time. He's got his head in his hands. All right, Suze Kempner. We don't have any hit singles on this side of the album, so which of these beautiful tracks are you putting forward for the Queen de la Queen playlist on Spotify?
That's easy.
Oh, yeah?
Get Down, Make Love. It's My Melancholy Blues.
Is it?
It was only ever going to be, yeah.
Yeah, 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 of course. I understand. Simon, where are you at? I know. I know. I'm finding it hard this time as well.
It is hard. I have a feeling that My Melancholy Blues is going to make it onto the Queen de la Queen, and I think that is entirely accurate. However, I am just going to vote for It's Late so it gets an honourable mention.
Well, you can't try and influence things like that, Simon.
Yes, I can. I just
okay, did. Fair enough, you did. Yeah. Okay. All right, fair enough. All right, John, where are you at, mate?
Well, I'm not sure My Melancholy Blues is going to get on the Queen de la
Queen.
You just
said it was so your favourite Queen song.
Yes, but remember how this works. I am thinking about who has the casting vote. I am obviously voting for My Melancholy Blues.
Oh, I see. I see. Yeah.
I love it to bits. I also absolutely adore It's Late.
Yeah.
But it's a very close second to My Melancholy Blues for me. Yes.
Okay, so I'm loving how manipulative this section of the show is becoming. It's very uncomfortable for me. Listen, I am voting for It's Late. And I'll come back to it in a minute when we talk about our favourite track from the whole album. But I am going for It's Late because it's one of those tracks that I'm desperate for non-Queen fans to hear. I really am. And also, it's 6.5 minutes. Like, that is good value.
There's nothing else like My Melancholy Blues in Queen. Mm. I think you can get elements of It's Late elsewhere. I just think it's My Melancholy Blues is such an outlier. And just like Sue said, when you play it to people, they go, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Not just, is that Queen? But I love that song.
We've got two votes for It's Late and two votes for My Melancholy Blues. And I'm telling you, with my casting vote, that the track that is making it on to the Queen de la Queen on side B of News of the World is My Melancholy Blues.
Yeah.
That's right.
You're too kind.
That's right. Absolute.
That was
like,
close.
Oh my God. So much emotional manipulation. I can't believe it. That really hurt. Listen, we get to pick one track from the whole album that isn't one of the big singles. John, for you it's My Melancholy Blues, yes? And Suze, are you the same?
Yes, I played this song to a friend of mine. He's an Olivier Award-winning composer, Richard Thomas. He wrote Jerry Springer. And I played him this, and he's a tough man to please. And he went, wow, this is effing brilliant.
Wow.
So that
okay.
exact
that
thing
That is an
happened.
Endorsement. Yeah. Yeah, fair play. Simon, where are you at?
Blues.
One track from the whole album. What do you want?
Yeah, My Melancholy Blues is a real contemporary. I'm gonna go with Spread Your Wings.
Oh, lovely. Oh, what a lovely yeah. choice. And the reason why My Melancholy Blues was the deciding vote was because I have written here, if I had to pick one track from the whole album, it would be My Melancholy Blues. Oh. So, there we go. How fantastic. My goodness. Well, there you have it. What an episode. Do you know that's the last album this season?
Oh, my word.
Right?
Oh, my God, of course.
We're getting on to Jazz in season 3, fingers crossed,
wow.
later in the year.
Also,
it
I've just
amazing.
Found out I'm going to be chatting to Brian May next week.
Oh, that's amazing. Congratulations.
Wow.
How
that
awesome.
His new single with Kerry.
Oh, amazing. John, that's wonderful. Good
Excited
for you, man.
What a treat.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. All right, there you have it. Please email us with your stories and questions, queenpod@thequeenpodcast.com. We absolutely love hearing from you. We will put as much as we can in the podcast for you. The last episode of the season, a couple of episodes away, will be a fan special, so we'll put loads and loads on. In fact, Patreons, if you record a little audio of you asking a question, we'll play that in. So we'd love to hear from you guys. Got a few more Patreons to thank. Scott Grady out in Atlanta, Breeline Clark, sorry if I'm spelling that wrong, Breeline. Bree, I'm calling you Bree. Bree Clark, Nancy Popowski as well. Thank you to all of you, wonderful Patreons. And Bohemians, you will be getting deets on our first Q&A session very soon. So please spread our little wings, please. If you love the podcast, chances are other Queen fans will love this too. Spread the word. do put those ratings up there. Do get those reviews out. I can't tell you how important it is to help us keep going, because we love doing this, and it's so lovely that you love us doing this. So we want that to keep going really very much. And I always find a little wisdom in these songs. So until next time, everybody, get down and make low, whoa, whoa, safely and respectfully. Thank you to Suze, Simon, John, and producer Giles. Goodbye! Bye. Hashtag Play Queen Loud!
This has been The Queen Pod, a Seven Seas Films production, edited and produced by me, Fergus March. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and stay in touch by emailing queenpod@thequeenpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.